Well, I'm Jim Holbrook. I served at the mission in 76 to 77, and I was a tour officer, which meant that I was one of the officers who went out into East Germany collecting intelligence information wherever we could. The chief at the mission at that time was Colonel Pete Thorson. For most of the time I was there, towards the end, just before I left, Colonel Don Stovall came in and took over as chief. We of course continued to do what the mission had been doing for years, and going out and trying to determine the status of the Soviet and East German forces, checking out their installations, looking at their equipment when possible, watching for new equipment coming in from the Soviet Union, looking for the convoys and training areas. Of course, a lot of the training took place in the permanent restricted areas, which we called PRAs. And then when there was a major exercise, they would have temporary restricted areas of TRAs. So sometimes we were not allowed to get into areas the training was taking place. But we often found a way to find out who was involved and what they were using. And our information, together with information from other sources, would then help U.S. intelligence determine what the activity and the status of the Soviet East German forces were. There were a couple of things that occurred while I was at the mission, 76 and 77, that I think are kind of notable. One is that the Operation Sand Dune was really getting underway. It was an operation in which we would go out, and this has all been declassified now since the declassification of the U.S. MLM histories by USERR. Sand Dune, we would go out and look for trash areas where the Soviets would throw their trash. Sometimes it would be in a regular trash dump. Other times it would be just on the other side of an insulation wall. And we found a lot of interesting things, a lot of valuable things there, because despite the fact that the Soviets seemed to be so paranoid in their personnel security as far as throwing away their equipment and supplies and things of that nature, they were pretty lax. They must have thought we weren't going to dirty our hands getting into those trash dumps. And of course, those were the days when we didn't know an awful lot about what was going on in the Soviet army. It was very difficult to get an inside picture of what was happening. So often materials that we would pick up in trash dumps and sometimes in training areas would provide insights as to what was occurring in some of the units, what the hierarchy of rank was, the units, the troubles they might be having, and some personal things that would give us indications of the morale of the Soviet soldier. That was just getting underway pretty seriously when I was there. Captain Nick Troyan was one of the leading officers to get that going. And the reason he was a leading officer and one of the reasons I was able to get so involved is because with our knowledge of Russian, we could pick and choose some of the things that we were going to bring in. And then when we got back to the mission house in West Berlin, we could go over some of those materials, do some quick translations, and be able to determine how important something was before we sent it on to USERR or to DIA. But there was another activity that I was very, very deeply involved in that I think was rather significant, and that was what we call Operation Servine Twist. That is the code name that was given to the visit by Soviet Army General Ivanovsky, who was sink of GSFG at the time, his visit to West Germany and to our sink, General George Blanchard.
What was the code name of that again? I'm sorry, what was the code?
Servine Twist.
Servine Twist?
Yes. CERVINETWIST.
Okay.
And you'll find a whole chapter on this in my book when you get it.
All right.
So you can fill in gaps that I may make here.
Yeah, you arrived at the mission just after I left. I knew Nick Troyan and Tom Spencer, who were kind of involved in getting that sand dunes thing off the ground.
Sure.
So, yeah, they were great to tour with.
That's right. And So it really got big time later on. As we started getting feedback from Washington and Heidelberg about how valuable some of the things we brought in was, the mission and the new chiefs devised a more systematic way of approaching this, and it became a major, major operation, provided a very high percentage of the valuable intelligence reports that we submitted. But getting back to Servine Twist, there had been visits between the sinks of the GSFG, the Group Soviet Forces Germany, and USSR in the past. They were few and far between, but they were very often simply diplomatic protocol-type meetings. Well, it turns out that in 1973, the sink USSR, General Michael Davison, went to Wernsdorf, to the Soviet headquarters, to visit General Ivanovsky. And he took with him a senior corps commander and a senior division commander. The senior corps commander turned out to be Lieutenant General George Blanchard, who then soon became General George Blanchard and sink USSR. So when the next visit occurred in 1977, in July of 1977, General Blanchard had a major impact on how that visit was going to be conducted. And what's important is that when General Blanchard was there in 73, everything he saw was staged. It was fake. Everything, it was a real Potemkin village, as the Russians would call it, making things look a lot nicer, a lot smoother than they really were. And it got to be very boring, and General Blanchard at the time was rather upset, and he said to himself, if you ever had a chance to bring Ivanovsky out to West Germany, he was going to do it differently. And that's exactly what he did. He called in advisors from the mission to find out as much as he could about what the Soviet Army thought about the American Army, U.S. Army, Europe. He told all his commanders, his corps and division commanders, that when the Russians came in July, he was going to allow them to see just anything they wanted to, so that if there was anything classified, they should hide it. Because when we got on the ground, we were going to go at the whim of the Soviet general. We would go left or right or whatever happened. Well, the short story of I hate to say bottom line, it's such a cliche, but the result of this visit of Soviet General, Army General Ivanovsky to West Germany was one of astonishment to the Soviets, because they couldn't quite understand why we were being so open with them. They thought we were being very, very open. As I said, the classified equipment was hidden, and they weren't allowed to go into classified areas. But when we were out in the field, we were looking at the equipment. We answered all their questions. We allowed them to talk to soldiers. If General Ivanovsky said he wanted to go look at this, they would say, fine. He wanted to get in an M60 tank and fire it. General Blanchard said, fine. They set it up, and he got in, fired, and hit all his targets. When he got out of the tank, his general said, oh, General Ivanovsky, what a good shot you are. And General Ivanovsky said, well, hell, there's nothing to it. All I had to do was push a button. It was all done by computers. But then it was a 2 or 3 day visit, actually a 2 full day visit. And at the end of it, General Ivanovsky called General Blanchard over and said, you know, I could tell that you were being quite honest with us, and you were not trying to blow smoke or stage things for us. And I can only conclude that you wouldn't do that if you weren't a confident army. And you are very confident in your army, and I can see that. So we always assumed that that was a very important impression for this particular general, because he went on back to the Soviet Union, eventually became commander-in-chief of all Soviet ground forces. We often wondered whether he instituted any of the things he saw in General Blanchard's U.S. Army Europe, but we'll never know for sure. But that was a very important event, and I was very involved in it because I was the chief of interpreter support, and I had some very able interpreters working with me, Rich Kosevich and Ed Hamilton. Rich was at the mission with me at the time. Ed Hamilton and Bob Benning were at the U.S. Army Russian Institute in Garmisch. And then Joe Chuchulski, who had previously been at the mission. So actually all the interpreters either had been, were at, or would come to the mission in the next few years. And what we did is we had the NCOs do all the briefings, and officers just did the translations. That's when I think back to my time at the mission. Those are the two major items I think about. I think about the sand dune collections, and I think about that visit by General Ivanovsky. Have any questions, Dave?
Yeah, it was real interesting. Joe Chuchulski was the house father at Potsdam while I was there, the second one. He followed Lieutenant Kimmel. But did he come back to the mission after being a house father in another capacity, or he was...
No, he was assigned to a unit in U.S. Army Europe.
I see. Okay.
And because of his familiarity both with the mission and with... Ivanovsky and his as you know, his excellent Russian, mm-hmm. We pulled him in to help interpret.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I heard he passed away. I never heard what the cause was, but...
Well, what I heard was that he went to visit Poland. As you know, he had a Polish background. Mm-hmm. Went to visit Poland, he caught something, some kind of bug, and that did him in. I don't know what it was.
Wow. That's really too bad.
So he was still a young man. He was still a captain, I think, when he died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to spend a lot of interesting nights chatting there at Potsdam when I would stay over when I was on pass. We were pretty close. While I was there, I lost contact with him after I left the mission and left the service. But I always liked Lieutenant Chuchulski, as I called him. I didn't call him Joe, of course, because the formality officer relationship. But those are good stories. I could use some of that, I'm quite sure.
I'm sure if you talk to Nick, he'll be able to give you some information. See, Nick wasn't there for the Ivanovsky visit. But he was there as we were getting ready for it, and then he can give you more information on Sandin. And I want to point out again that the details on these and a few other things are in the book that you'll get in the next day or two. Mm-hmm. There's a whole chapter on Sandin and a whole chapter on the visit by Ivanovsky.
Okay, great. What I'll probably do, I plan on integrating these interviews or conversations, as I like to call them, with actual factual text that I can gather from different sources as a precursor to the conversation. And I'll probably, your book will come in quite handy to be able to put a lot of that together, I'm sure.
Well, you're welcome to use anything, and also you'll have pictures of the visit. You won't have any pictures of Sandin, but you'll have pictures of the of Ivanovsky's visit.
That's fabulous.
And you can use them or any other pictures. I own all that stuff, so you have my permission to use whatever you want to.
Okay, great. And there's a picture of you while you were there. What I'd like to do is I want to kind of superimpose the voice with a picture of the person so people can get an idea of who you are while you're talking.
There are a couple pictures. My favorite one is me and Major Rich Kosevich.
Okay.
And it's a good picture. It's a good quality picture.
All right. Now you.
There's another one there with me.
Go ahead.
With me and Sergeant Jim Rice. Did you know Jim Rice?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, he was after me.
Okay.
Another thing, I'm going to this part three. I'm going to revisit the reunion last May, which I wasn't able to attend, but I've got a lot of digital photos from that, and Marilyn Sukup Jones sent me quite a few, and what I want to do is get a few interviews from people who were there just to kind of generally talk about what their impression was of the reunion, what, you know, what, just to try and get some some filler, I guess you'd call it, for the slideshow that I'm going to put together for that aspect. And you were there, weren't you? I recall having pictures of you, in fact, there.
Yes. Yes, I was there. And are you familiar with Chief Fisher's website?
Yeah, my family. I visit that regularly.
Because there are a lot of pictures there.
Okay, yeah, I've got quite a few things from him.
Yeah. Well, what I found was fun, of course, to see everybody mm-hmm. at the mission. It was my first reunion, the first one I'd attended. And I got to see a lot of people who served at the mission even after me, but whom I knew. A couple of these officers were my cadets when I taught at West Point.
Oh, really?
And one of them was Kevin Ryan. He was a brigadier general. He's retired now. Hmm. But he was one of my Russian students at West Point. And the other was Howie Berner, who took over from Chichulski at the mission house, at the Potsdam House.
Oh, yeah.
And then Ed Hamilton, he and I taught at West Point together, and he later served at the mission. He got seriously injured in a ramming by the East Germans. Hmm. They got to see him and Ronald LaJoy. Well, I have, you know, a lot of people. This field of Russian intelligence was relatively small, and we ran into each other in different assignments at different times, including the Air Force officers and enlisted people. So it was good to get together for the reunion. Reunion was handled very well, and was a large crowd, and everything went pretty smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I'll.